You're listening to SBS News.
As week two of the United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, began in Glasgow, a full-page advert appeared in a British newspaper. It called on global leaders to phase out fossil fuels as if their lives depended on it. The ad featured a photo of a kangaroo silhouetted against a building engulfed in flames. That image went viral during Australia's Black Summer bushfires. The advert was paid for by Emergency Leaders for Climate Action, a coalition of former senior Australian fire and emergency service leaders. This week, they brought together a group of survivors of natural disasters to speak outside the conference. The president of Bushfires Survivors for Climate Action, Joe Dodds, was among them.
Unless we are part of this conversation and the costs that are falling on ordinary people from countries across the globe, unless we're here and recognised and heard, there's not going to be climate justice.
In March 2018, Miss Dodds fled her home in the New South Wales coastal town of Tathra as flames approached. Her house was spared, but many of her neighbours were not as lucky. 69 homes in the town were destroyed. Another survivor of extreme weather events is California resident Regina Banks. She's lived through devastating summer wildfires that have engulfed much of her state. She says she attended COP26 to represent those without a voice who are the worst affected by severe weather events attributed to rapid global warming.
There is a particular despair when it's 110 degrees and the sky is on fire because the northern half of your state is burning along with the rest of the Pacific Northwest. I have a young nephew who is 10 years old, and during the late spring, early summer months, his school has to check the air quality to see whether or not the children can go outside and play. I recall very recently in the last fire season, I was on a staff meeting call, and I was telling my colleagues, I can't even find air filters anywhere in the state because they've been sold out. That's what people are trying to do to keep the particulate matter out of their homes.
The sense of urgency at this year's conference is palpable. Many feel that this is the international community's last chance to bring about meaningful change and prevent catastrophic global warming. Some 120 world leaders have been in attendance, and a flurry of new emissions pledges have been agreed to. Speaking at the event was former United States President Barack Obama. He lamented that little progress had been made by countries that had signed up to the Paris Climate Accords in 2015.
We are nowhere near where we need to be yet. For starters, despite the progress that Paris represented, most countries have failed to meet the action plans that they set 6 years ago. And the consequences of not moving fast enough are becoming more apparent all the time. Last month, a study found that 85% of the global population has experienced weather events that were more severe because of climate change. Stronger storms, longer heat waves, more intense flooding, crippling droughts. Parts of the world are becoming more dangerous to live in, triggering new migration patterns and worsening conflict around the globe.
The extreme weather events that Mr. Obama talked about are expected to become commonplace by 2040. The UN is now calling on nations to accelerate their commitments, warning that the planet is still on course for a catastrophic temperature rise of 2.7 degrees Celsius this century. This is largely because the most ambitious emissions cuts won't start to be enacted until after 2030. Australia's commitments are widely viewed as unambitious. It didn't support a pledge signed by 40 other countries to shift away from coal or agree to reduce methane emissions by 30% by 2030, something 100 other nations have committed to. Joe Dodd says it's this sort of inaction that made it crucial she and others like her went to Glasgow.
We're here to hold countries like my country, Australia, to account. You cannot have investment in coal mines increasing at the same time as you're saying that you're tackling climate change. So we don't want that. As Australians, we need our country to step up, do more, and stop investing in industries that are causing catastrophic bushfires.
Before departing for the summit, which only weeks earlier he had been non-committal about attending, Prime Minister Scott Morrison rolled out a new plan to commit Australia to net zero emissions by 2050. But the plan was criticised by many for being both lacklustre and superficial, with no new policies or legislation to enforce the proposed changes. The head of research at the Climate Council, Dr. Simon Bradshaw, says that Australia's continued promotion of the fossil fuels industry, as well as its refusal to review its 2030 targets, made Mr. Morrison stick out among the delegates for all the wrong reasons.
Well, Glasgow was always first and foremost about 2030, and Australia did show up as pretty much the only one amongst its peers, amongst the other advanced economies, that hadn't brought a much stronger target for 2030. So that really had us under a lot of scrutiny straight away. Australia then used its platform here, this pavilion it had built, to do some spruiking for the fossil fuel industry, believe it or not, which was quite remarkable and I think did draw a lot of ire from a lot of people here.
Since Mr. Morrison's return home, the UN has released analysis that compares the climate change policies of 64 countries. Australia ranks last, something that Dr. Bradshaw isn't surprised by.
Australia has a history of showing up with very weak targets, with seeking special treatments, with being obstructive in various aspects of the negotiations, but it did rather outdo itself this time with a very unashamedly regressive agenda that certainly did not make us any friends here. I think what's generally very confusing to a lot of our international peers is, I mean, when you ask anyone here what they think of when they think of Australia and climate change, they immediately think of bushfires, because the Black Summer fires in particular, they not only seared into our memories, they were seen by millions of people around the world, and people will also have heard of the damage to the Great Barrier Reef. So there's this recognition of the enormous vulnerability Australia faces from climate change.
Dr. Bradshaw attributes much of this to the influence of fossil fuel lobbyists.
We are a sunny and windy country that has enormous potential to be generating renewable energy. And yet we're still doubling down on fossil fuels. And that's where, unfortunately, we have to recognise that we've had a very strong and, you know, patched up fossil fuel lobby in this country for a long time. A lot of vested interest looking to hold back action, and we just have to hope that that will change.
Perhaps the most poignant words of all, however, were uttered outside the conference by Australian sustainability expert Hannah Paris. During the most recent Black Summer bushfires, her parents had lost their home in New South Wales' Lake Conjola. Miss Paris spoke of the relief she felt upon discovering her parents had escaped, but the devastation felt at the loss of irreplaceable heirlooms.
In our particular case, our family heirlooms had come to us when our grandmother and our great-grandparents had fled Nazi Germany 80 years before. And sad to say, while these items that meant so much to us had survived and had escaped Nazi Germany, they couldn't survive an Australian summer. And it made us realise that while my family initially sought safety in Australia, Australia was no longer a safe place to be.
No longer safe, but showing no signs of phasing out fossil fuels. This is Tina Quinn with SBS News.